This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie-cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.
This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, July 8th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Many of us use YouTube to watch and share videos. But if you've ever fallen down a YouTube rabbit hole, clicking from one recommended video to another, you may have come across some questionable content. Well, YouTube has been working to limit the problematic videos it suggests to users, but a new study finds it has a ways to go. On today's episode, our reporter Trip Mickle, who covers YouTube's parent company Google, joins us to discuss. We'll have that conversation after these headlines. Former President Donald Trump is suing Facebook, Twitter, and Google in an effort to get his social media profiles reinstated. The class action suit, with Trump as its most prominent plaintiff, claims the tech giants violated the First Amendment rights of Trump and others when they suspended their accounts. Here's Trump at a press conference yesterday.
We're demanding an end to the shadow banning, a stop to the silencing, and a stop to the blacklisting, banishing, and canceling that you know so well.
Facebook, Twitter, and Google-owned YouTube removed Trump's profiles following the riot at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. Spokespeople for Twitter and Facebook declined to comment. A representative from Google didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. Now, you've probably heard about the booming tech sector in China and India, but keep an eye out for South Korea. The country now has 10 unicorns, the young private companies worth more than $1 billion. That's according to CB Insights. That makes South Korea the third largest hub for such companies in the Asia-Pacific region. Our reporter Francis Yoon says one key to this expansion has been support from the government.
They see it as something that could help drive economic growth for the country. They know that as economic growth becomes more competitive and challenging, that they really see this need to build 10 companies at home as a very important source of future growth. And they're also mindful of how big these U.S. companies and tech companies in developed nations are becoming much more powerful. And I think the Korean government wants to see that happen within their own home grounds.
You can hear more on the growth of South Korea's startup scene on this morning's episode of our sister podcast, What's News? And dozens of states filed an antitrust lawsuit against Google related to practices on its Google Play App Store. Google didn't immediately comment, and a copy of the suit wasn't immediately available for review. Google's Play Store is the primary marketplace for downloading apps to its Android operating system, and it collects a 15-30% service fee on sales. The search giant is already facing lawsuits from state and federal officials over its dominance in search advertising and ad tech. Speaking of Google, problematic content is still being recommended by the company's YouTube service, despite changes made to address it. We'll get into why after the break.
This podcast is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm you share something with. Listening. They take the time to understand you and your business so you get the best solution, not more noise. Start a conversation at gt.com.
Over the last few years, you've probably heard concerns about extreme content on social media platforms like YouTube. Maybe you've even encountered some yourself. Following complaints from politicians, advertisers, and everyday users, YouTube began stepping up efforts to limit violent, sexual, and other problematic content. But a new study by the software nonprofit Mozilla Foundation finds that YouTube is still recommending large amounts of this content to its users, despite the company's efforts. The study, which tracked YouTube activity for 37,000 volunteers over the course of just under a year, found that 71% of videos the participants flagged as objectionable were recommended by YouTube's algorithm. Joining us now to discuss the findings of the study is our tech reporter, Trip Mickle. Hi, Trip. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So, Trip, the study just came out, but the issue of problematic content, it's not a new concern for YouTube, right?
certainly not a new concern for YouTube. I mean, we really saw this flare up in 2017 with concern about brands that were having commercials run during terrorist recruiting videos. And then it's kind of just lingered ever since then. And it's taken on new shape and dimension over time as well, where you also not only have concerns about like problematic content, but you also have concerns about like policing content and censoring content. And so this has really become a hot button issue for YouTube and all of tech.
And let's define for our listeners what problematic content is.
These are videos that violate YouTube's own policy. So we're talking about videos that they would classify as spreading misinformation or false claims, that they would classify as having some kind of like sexually explicit content, those type of things.
But how is it that so much problematic content ends up on YouTube in the first place?
Well, it's a outgrowth of a business model that prioritizes the simplicity and ease of uploading video over what we historically have known to kind of be a component of the media experience, which is, you know, filtering and editing and pre-selecting content before it's available for view. All of that is done by machine after the fact, whereas from, you know, the advent of television on, you always had people vetting and choosing what was shown before it actually went to air.
So then tell me why it's so hard for YouTube to remove this content immediately after it's been posted.
Well, you got to think of it as a supply problem as much as anything, right? On a daily basis, something on the order of 720,000 hours of video are uploaded to YouTube. How do you police that? I mean, none of that is vetted before it's uploaded. So you're policing it on the back end. It's like a dam bursting and like all the water flowing at you. You can't really like stop it all of a sudden. You eventually let it settle into a lake and then deal with it. And that's kind of what they've chosen to do.
Okay, so what has YouTube done so far to combat the spread of this problematic content?
Well, essentially what you have are two algorithms kind of playing against each other inside YouTube. You have one algorithm that's basically reviewing videos based on viewership patterns of people and making recommendations to people that, you know, of videos that they think would be of interest. And then by the same token, you have separate machine learning trained algorithms and machine learning trained operations that are trying to front run those recommendations and catch content that violates YouTube's policies before that those videos are actually fed to users and visitors to its website.
And have we heard anything from YouTube or Google since this study came out?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, YouTube really points to the headway it made over the past year as its machine learning system got better. It was able to reduce the amount of views of what it calls, quote, violative videos, which means videos that violate its policies, by something on the order of 70%. It now accounts for less than 1% of all video viewed across the platform.
And, you know, we're sitting here right now talking about YouTube, this study focused on YouTube in particular, but it's not the only social media platform that relies on algorithms to recommend content. So what are other platforms doing to prevent problematic content? And is there anybody getting it right?
No one is getting it right, to answer your question. I mean, the entire social media apparatus, Facebook, Twitter, to YouTube, has really been built on this premise that we're going to democratize the ability to communicate or share information and make that, you know, possible as fast and with an immediacy and speed that didn't previously exist. And since then, they, you know, that helped all of these companies flourish. Now they're dealing with the consequences of that, and they're somewhat stuck between a rock and a hard place with people voicing legitimate concerns about what they consider to be divisive, misleading, or offensive content. And then on the same flip side, they're dealing with people who are concerned about censorship and the elimination of content that they believe should be allowed. This is just the tricky line that all of these platforms are trying to walk right now.
All right. That's our reporter, Trip Mickle. Thanks for joining us, Trip.
Thanks so much for having me.
And that's it for today's episode of Tech News Briefing. You can always find more tech stories on our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review us. You can do it wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie-cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.